Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Raven Kiefer. Before I bring him on, I want to remind you to subscribe to Forbidden Knowledge News on lbry.tv, which is now Odyssey. We're also available on all popular podcast platforms. And for sure, check us out on Rockfin. Rockfin's where you get all of our premium content, and you can get all our regular shows for free. You get all the premium content from all the content creators on Rockfin. Just click the link in the description or visit rockfin.com/FKN+. Also, check out the amazing products at Ascent Nutrition. They're from the same fine folks at EMF Harmonized. I've been using their Peak Liver Support. It supports liver detoxification, and it's full of free radical scavengers. Also, I've been using their Nootropic Focus. It supports brain health and concentration, helps with memory and recall. They have some of the highest quality supplements available, and they even have organically grown mold and mycotoxin-free coffee. Just click the link in the description to check out what they have to offer. Also, if you'd like to make a donation, it is greatly appreciated. It helps us to be able to bring you amazing guests 5 nights a week or more. And you guys may have noticed a dwindling presence here on YouTube. YouTube has become the most disgusting platform in existence, and we want to get you guys onto one of our other completely free platforms, like Rockfin. Yes, you can get all our content free on Rockfin, on Odyssey, and of course all the podcast platforms. We're almost completely shadow banned on YouTube anyway. It's getting worse by the day. I'm actually surprised we're still on here at all. I've been under some BS warning over my content for over a year, which restricts my reach, and it appears to be staying there for good. So all you have to do is just put a different web address in your browser to check out Forbidden Knowledge News. It is that easy, and all those links are also in the description. Tonight I want to welcome Raven Kiefer. He is a researcher and contributor to both Wikipedia and Indie Media at their start, and an expose writer from mid-1980s through today. He has 2 master's degrees, a doctorate in religious studies, bachelor degree in humanities with emphasis on sociology and psychology, and several associate's degrees in various fields. He currently has 23 books in print and has been a lifetime researcher that contributes to numerous YouTube channels, content creators, and independent reporters. Raven, welcome.
I appreciate that. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I've been looking forward to tonight. I know you've actually been a long-time listener of the show, and you have a very fascinating background, and it gives you, I'm sure, unique insights into many of the topics that I discuss here on my own show. Tonight, I'd like to dive into as many rabbit holes as we can and get into some of those topics. And I'd love to hear your insights for what we're going to be talking about tonight. First, you do, like I said, you have a very interesting background. I'd love to hear about a little bit more about that and kind of what got you started down your current path.
You know, I'm a lot older, so I'm a generation, almost 2 generations ahead of you. What got me started is I found this weird book in the old Carnegie Library where I lived that was Chariots of the Gods. So like a lot of people my age, Eric Von Doniget is the one that got us questioning things. And that is the primary source for all the research that I've done for 40 years.
Yeah, that's an excellent source, though. I mean, that's a great place to start. Now, based on some of the topics that I cover and some of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight, have you had any experiences in your life that you can't explain, any paranormal, UFO sightings, anything like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you've gotten into that subject, but there have been so many strange things that I have come across in travels and, sitting here at my house, even that, that old saying, life is stranger than fiction. I believe it applies universally. As far as UFO goes, the first time I saw one of the giant triangles was in 1995. There's a huge sighting that went from Illinois up through Wisconsin and Michigan. And I happened to be kind of like in the middle of it. I was in Wisconsin at the time, and we were outside, and this thing went overhead at about treetop level, maybe a little bit taller. Now you got to understand where I was at, the trees were probably 80 or 90 feet, and it was probably maybe twice that in height. Went over silently, had blue lights, like a power source. It didn't make any noise. And if you were on a bicycle, you probably could have kept up with it for a while. So these triangle sightings, they're not new.
You think those triangles are ours?
I've always thought that that technology was human. And the reason why I say this is because, back to what we were talking about a minute ago, Joe Farrell, with the research that was done in Germany during World War II, it's not new technology. You can go back to East India, and the Vimanas that they write about were flying vehicles the size of cities. I think the trick has been somehow preventing us from being able to see it. I honestly think it's more about interdimensional or outside of our ability to see. You know, our visual, I've heard you mention this on another show, but our visual spectrum is so small. Our ability to hear is so limited. All of our senses are locked into this really, really finite zone. Literally, somebody could be standing next to me right now and listening to me, and if their vibration level was just a little bit higher or lower than mine, I wouldn't be able to see them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's where I fall into with these things that we see in the sky. Like, I've seen the Merkaba. I actually videotaped one and sent it to a friend of mine that does YouTube videos, and he put it up. But those things are being seen all around the planet right now. It looks like a star until you zoom in on it, and then you can, it looks like a spinning Merkaba. What it is, there's that thing, the difference between seeing and being able to describe what it is and knowing what it is.
And I don't know if you've seen the show with one of my recent guests. I'm trying to think of his name right now, which it is escaping me. But he takes infrared pictures of the sky. And I believe he's based in the UK. His name is escaping
me. Yes,
right,
I saw
now.
That. I saw that show.
Yes, and he's taking pictures of all kinds of things. It looks like fish in the sky. Yes. Just insane things that may be there existing in the sky at all times, and we just can't see them. That's very interesting.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote a short story, and this was when we were redeveloping airplanes. And I say redeveloping because you can go back and look at old photographs, or not photographs, but drawings, and some very old text, including Chinese, and you can see aircraft. You know, the people talk about the carvings that are in the Egyptian. But you can see the same carvings in South America, India, China. So we've flown before. The cataclysms reset us, and it's taken us. But I think there's somebody out there that didn't lose their technology. So you look at infrared. We can't see an infrared without help. And even then, it's limited. I think they've been around us all along. And if you go to the tribal traditions like I do, they say that these people walk around us all the time, whether it be Bigfoot or little people. Over in Europe, they got gnomes and fairies and fae folk. Here we call them Ushti, which literally means little people. You'll see a little twinkle go by you, and you know they say, "Oh, that was an Ushti." I think they move at a speed or in a spectrum that we just can't see visually. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense, and I would have to agree with that. And you know, you mentioned how this has been seen throughout ancient times, and we probably had the ability to fly and possibly traverse the stars in ancient times. I want to talk a little bit about our history and basically the rewriting of it. For those that really doubt our history has been rewritten, all they have to do is look at what's happening right now. Our
exactly.
History is being rewritten and destroyed as we speak. I mean, will the next generation know about Looney Tunes or Muppets or any book that's been published that doesn't fit the narrative? You know, it's like,
yeah. Well, you know, we've already started experiencing Fahrenheit 451 in different stages. In Germany, they burnt books. Pol Pot burnt books. Mao burnt books. In Texas, they burnt books in the 1990s. Rewriting history is, according to one, I can't remember which Rockefeller said it, but rewriting history is a simple matter of convincing two generations that the past didn't exist. And if you think about that, you look at what's being, a very good example is U.S. textbooks. You won't see it on a reservation, but the Board of Education in a couple of places have actually put in textbooks that the Eastern Native Americans moved west to make room for settlers. They failed to mention that it was at gunpoint and forcibly. Now imagine two generations or three generations reading that. How long does it take to erase travesties?
Yeah. And when it comes to the, I guess, one of the most profound history erasing events that's been documented, would you say it would surround the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you have different groups working here. We have to go back a little bit further. You know about Göbekli Tepe.
Yes.
And we know that that was somewhere around 12,600 years ago.
Right.
And then we had another reset, and I point to the calendars used by the Hebrews that say 5780, 5800, and that's an estimate. So something happened at 6,000 years ago, and you've had other guests on that talk about the cataclysmic cycles that we go through.
Yes.
Is it a true reset? I don't know exactly. 12,600 years ago, the population of the world was dropped down to barely surviving. And somehow they knew beforehand to dig the cities that were underneath the ground, held 50 and 100,000 people. And in Europe, they had tunnels that literally went underneath the ground, and all that stuff was hidden. Thankfully, we have people like Brian Forrester and Matthew LaCroix and others that are digging this stuff back out again. But how easy was it for him to hide all that? And these are things that we're just now discovering, thank goodness.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to some of the knowledge that we had in our ancient past, there's, you know, plenty of different theories and arguments about where this came from. I mean, did it come from ancient aliens that, you know, gave us genetic upgrades? Was it from eating a psychedelic mushroom that gave us, you know, some kind of advanced knowledge? Was it a spiritual contact? You know, there's all kinds of possibilities when it comes to that. I'd like to get your thoughts on where do you think our ancient knowledge came from? Because we don't have that anymore. We can't even recreate, you know, the megaliths that we used to do. It seems like we're actually stupider now.
Well, I mean, if you look at the chemicals and the things that are being put into our food and the air and the water and what have you, we probably have lost quite a bit of intelligence. I hate to say that. I imagine that the smartest amongst us are woefully inadequate compared to those that came before. I mean, if they had Vimanas and were flying around, there's something that we lost, and it seemed to be intentional. Was it an alien that came here? You know, if you look at the Anunnaki stories and things like that, I have to look at the source as much as I look at the information. We have the same people that are in charge, that have been in charge for at least 6,000 years, and they haven't been truthful about anything. Now, these are the same people that set up our academic institutions, our educational systems, and our oligarchs, whether it be as in monarchies or religious. These people set these things up, and it seems like they set them up very recently, as in maybe 800 or 1200 AD. It doesn't mean that they didn't exist prior to that. It just, what we're dealing with is not that old, maybe 600 or 800 years. So everything before that, unless we can find definitive answers to it, and we do find some in China, and we do find some in India, the Aboriginals in Australia, the Zulu in Africa, we have to be careful because information is not the same thing as knowledge.
Yes, 100%. Now, you mentioned that the people that have basically rewrote history and are still the ones kind of running things today. Now,
well, they've managed to hide themselves in history pretty well.
Right.
Have you ever heard of the Gnosians? And
the
I'm not
Gnotians.
Talking about the Gnostics. Gnosians. It's K-N-O-S-S-I-A-N NS. They're from a little island in the Mediterranean now, but they were a global, I mean, absolutely a global trading force for a very long time. It seems somehow that they survived the cataclysm 6,000 years ago and in the 1200s to regain more power. These would be your source for the Gnostic teachings, I would say, because they truly believe that we're in a matrix and the only way out is to destroy it. Huh. And I'm sure you've heard other people talk about the nihilists.
Yes.
But the Gnosians come from an island, and you can't miss it. I'm not going to pinpoint them, but if anybody wants to look, there's a little place called Pente, P-E-N-T-E. And that means dragon, by the way, or Draco. You know, are these the archons that we're talking about? There have been images of these people that are like 7 and 8 feet tall.
Yeah, and I've always thought that the ones that are really running the show, we're not going to know about. You're not going to hear about them on even the deepest conspiracy, you know, talk show or researcher isn't going to really know exactly who these people are. So I find it interesting that you mentioned these Gnosians.
Gnosians, yes. And the reason why I got to that is there's a lot of different places, but one of them is Herodotus. You know, Herodotus wrote about the Gnosians inserting themselves in every empire from Egypt, Babylon, Persian, Greek, Roman. He actually wrote and said that these people inserted themselves in places of power within the empires, building one while destroying the other. And if you look at our history, just what we know, let's just forget about what we believe, because that lie in the middle will get you in trouble. Look at what we know. We know that every empire that's been built has been built off the back of the previous empire, whether you go to the English, the French, the Portuguese, the Romans, the Greeks, the Persians, each one was a step. They used the last one to build up the next one and then destroyed the old one. And if you look at the United States today, which is going to really make people mad, they've done the same thing here. They used the United States to destroy the English Empire. They created the American Empire in the United States, used our military and our strength and our intelligence. And now what are they doing? We're not going to say that fine dinoware location, but most people will pick up what that means.
Right.
But these people have been around for a long, long time. And interestingly enough, the Gnosians are a female-driven society. Women are the ones that are in charge. And if you marry outside of their group, then you are no longer an immediate part of their group. You follow through history, and every male who has become anything has had a very odd connection to a wife or a woman. I don't care if it's our favorite philanthropist of modern times.
Right.
I'm going to be careful not to say the names, but we'll just say they created a lot of foundations and groups. And you can go back to the 1800s, and those same families have been interconnected with the families that were once in Europe. But they're connected through the females, not the males.
That is really interesting. Yeah, I've never heard anything about that. Now, there's a lot of occult practices that surround the elites, supposedly. And, you know, it's very vague and it's kind of hard to tell what exactly these occult practices are. You know, of course, you know, according to some of the modern researchers, it's all Satanism. I think it goes back much older than that. But my question is really, these people at the top levels, like these Gnosians, or, you know, maybe right below them, when you look at the faces that we hear about, Rockefellers, Rothschilds, do you think that they are involved in these occult practices and they believe in this stuff?
If you look at what we have historically, we know that a lot of these oligarchs, let's just call them that, I don't like to say elites because there's nothing elite about them.
Yeah, you're right.
They might have money, they might have wealth, they might have access to knowledge because they've hidden it. Well, if you have to hide it to protect yourself, then you're not an elite. You might be an oligarch, but if you look at their practices over time, I mean, We had the early ones right out of Persia that took blood baths using virgins. They've incorporated cannibalism and blood drinking in their religious rituals. Children vanish anytime these people are. We have pedophilia. We have, Marquis de Sade was not as evil as some of these people are in their practices sexually. I think a lot of it is to muddy things. If you're looking here, then you're not looking there. But their practices are psychopathic. If you have no concern whatsoever for fellow humans, as long as you're stuck in one of these bodies, then you definitely are a psychopath.
Right. And the highest level of like debauchery or, even I guess you could say drug use for these elites is children, right? Is trafficking and, sacrifice or whatever else they're doing with children, right?
Sexual abuse.
Yes.
You get into this, I don't want to say it's a cult, although they do try to hide it. That word is misused a lot. You look at the different sacrificial practices that they've created over time as control for people. We sacrifice our energy and our money to the oligarchs one way or the other, whether it be taxes or tithes. And somehow they've convinced people it's okay to give up your well-being for theirs. The worship of Baal, they used to take and build a fire and stick infants in the flame. That's not changed over time. Did it come from the Gnosians? It seems to me like it's a way of manipulating the population. As you think you are, if you look today, we have one of the greatest sacrificial things ever in the history of mankind, as far as I'm concerned. If you look at I don't even know how people are going to take it, but if you look at these abortion clinics, that is child sacrifice on a scale never seen before.
Right. I agree.
Now, I believe in the right not to be pregnant. I think women should be able to prevent pregnancy, but I do not think that is the means to do it.
Right.
And people get mad at me for saying that, but they have been convinced that that's okay. And to me, that is sacrifice of a caliber that's never been seen in the history of mankind.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And I've always thought that, if you're going to worship a God that requires, first of all, worship, that requires you to worship them, and let alone sacrifice something to him, I've just never felt okay with that. I've never felt that this is something you should be worshiping or calling a God or giving your power to,
No, absolutely. And, interestingly enough, these oligarchs that we were just speaking of are the ones that created these organizations that do this.
Yeah.
There's a connection there somewhere, right?
And, I'm wondering what levels do these occult practices trickle down to? I'm wondering if your local politicians are, involved in this. Just basically what level do you have to be to kind of get in on some of this, these practices,
Well, you look at the Epstein thing with the blackmail and the child prostitutes and human trafficking and people, whatever. Hillary Clinton caught with that group that was trafficking children out of Jamaica after the hurricane. I think, you got different tiers. And if you want to jump tiers, and this has been said by other people, but it seems to me, based on what has been revealed, if you want to jump tiers, then you also have to give up morality at different levels.
Yes.
These people have no consideration. If you look at what they're doing today, they have no consideration for human life. And the higher up the echelon you look, the less consideration they seem to give. historically, you can go back and you can look at this. They've sacrificed humanity to build empire and destroy empire at least for 6,000 years.
Do you think that's
before that we can't be sure?
Do you think that some of the larger events that have happened in history could have been sacrifices as well, like events like 9/11, Vegas shooting, things like that?
Well, you know, the Vegas shooting is an interesting one because you brought it up. I'll just say it out loud. The Vegas shooting is an interesting one because there is footage of the people in that room and the window is still intact until they break it. And the people were wearing badges. So if that window was still intact, and let's go back to Stephen Paddock, the one that supposedly did it. I found his obituary in Colorado Springs, Colorado, 2 years earlier. So if he's already dead and it's the same man's face, then how is he dead in Las Vegas 2 years
later? Oh, that's interesting. You found his obituary that was from 2 years before?
Yeah. You know, it's an old CIA scam. How many times can you die and not get caught? But anyway, his obituary was 2 years earlier in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So the minute I saw that, I'm like, okay, it's a scam. Now, does that mean people don't get hurt? Of course they get hurt. These people don't care as long as they can sell their story. I mean, you know, TV technology is another thing that most people haven't studied. Interestingly enough, the black boxes for cable and satellite TV came out in 1984, and we all know about that book. But those boxes have a frequency that they put out separate that creates an electrostatic field around them. So when you're watching, you're actually being prodded and probed by this thing. Well, with modern television, you've got cameras watching you. You've got the blue backlit screen that strobes at a frequency that you can't even see. Then you have neurolinguistics. You have frequency modulation on the sound and the visual. You are literally sitting in front of a hypnotic box. You know, back in the day, we used to call them idiot boxes. The longer you sit in front of them, the more idiot you became. But now they've perfected the technology to the point where you're literally being mesmerized. People wonder how they got people to go out and buy toilet paper instead of food, or how they convinced them that this happened and that happened and whatever. It's because if you sit in front of that thing long enough, your ability to think is gone. The patents prove it. Even worse, there's a frequency that they can set off that will cause strokes, aneurysm. You know, these are things that you don't want to talk about in a lot of places, but it's in the patents. It's not like it's hidden information. It's just that they've hidden it the best they could. And then people like me, you, and David Icke, and others that talk about this stuff are nutters. I love that word that David used. We're nutters because we actually did the research, and we know that this stuff is fact. I go back to what I said, though. It's very interesting to make it common household item out of those black boxes for cable and satellite happened in 1984.
Yeah. That is weird. Now, is
that planning? They knew it was coming, and they knew when they were going to do it.
Oh yeah. Now, you know, speaking of planning, everything that we see that's happened since 2020, you know, there's so many agendas at play. I'm wondering if you think that most of the what's happening now was pre-planned, or how much is it, you know, actual real events that they're taking advantage of to push their own agendas?
Blown? Are you ready to have your mind blown? In 1981, a guy named Jacques Attali, A-T-A-L-L-I, wrote a book, and I wish I could remember the title. And in the book, he said, "We will convince the people of a pandemic and or a financial crisis, and we will have a solution for them. The solution cannot be camps or executioners, but we will make it a cure that they will flock to, and we will convince them that they need it, and they will walk themselves to the slaughter." Now, this was written in 1981. All right.
And who wrote this?
His name was Jacques, J-A-Q-U-E-S, Attali, A-T-A-L-L-I. And when he wrote that, he was he's a chartered member of the Bilderbergs, if that tells you anything. So if I didn't blow your mind before, how's that for evidence?
Oh, yeah. and more of that, that evidence keeps popping up.
One of my backgrounds is pathogens, okay? I did as part of some of my history, I did quarantines for different outbreaks like anthrax in South America and Ebola. And anyway, so I know how to track inflammation and I'm very, very good at it. We know that this thing started out, this pathogen. Now let's differentiate between pathogens and virus. A pathogen is a contagion that has been created or released or is natural that gets into your body and creates a physiological response. That protein that your body creates is what they call a virus. They test you for it. Here it is. It's a protein. The pathogen created the physiological response, and what they call a virus is your body's trying to get rid of it. We know that they started the research here in North Carolina with a guy named Ralphie, and he was working with our, we'll call her the Bat Lady because I can never say her name correctly. And that research started here, and they were using technology to blend pathogens. We also need to differentiate very quickly between HIV, the protein, and a pathogen. HIV/AIDS is two separate things. HIV is a protein that is wrapped around a pathogen to allow it to insert itself into human physiology. It was patented in Africa by paperclip Germans working for a foundation from here in the United States. Can I say the name Richa Heller?
Yeah.
But anyway, so they patented that. And then they figured out a way to attach AIDS, which was a simian virus, and now it can jump into humans. All right. What we're dealing with today is HIV SARS-CoV-2. Now, let's be specific here. HIV is a protein wrapped around it that allows it to enter human physiology. SARS is a bat virus that could never naturally jump into a human. And CoV-2 is a coronavirus, which is a flu virus. So when they said, oh, it's a flu, they weren't lying. What they were lying about was the inserts put into it. And even worse is our friend Ralphie here in North Carolina was trying to figure out how to use HIV inserts as a strap to put Nipah. Nipah is a very deadly, nasty thing that the CDC came up with in India. But anyway, I'll say this stuff out loud. I don't care. CDC is a private for-profit company. They are not a government agency, and they should have zero authority. And I'll say that out loud. Every place that we've had Nipah, Hendra, SARS has had CDC connections. That should tell everybody what they need to know. And yes, you know, I realize I'm putting myself at risk, but so HIV SARS-CoV-2 is what we're dealing with now. It has HIV inserts playing to see in the blast sequence, the protein sequence. All right. And I have full, absolute 100% proof that the HIV is in there. Why did the Australian Ministry of Health test the injectee recipients for HIV if they didn't know it was there? So what we have is we have a lab created virus that created a situation. Now it's a flu. Now here's my thing. When you create a pathogen that causes the body to expunge of what they call a protein, which is a virus that they're labeling. When you create a virus, it's like a monster truck. If you got giant wheels on a truck, it cuts a huge rut. All right. The bigger the tire, the bigger the track's going to be, right? Well, this thing here, when we first looked at it, we were expecting somewhere around a 13% death rate right off the bat. The problem is we didn't get it. So now you got to go back and you got to look at it and you say, okay, this thing should have cut ruts the size of a monster truck. But instead, what it did is it left little bicycle tracks. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, then we found the HIV inserts. Well, you go back to HIV AIDS. There are a lot of people who have HIV AIDS that never became active. So with a protein, the way you break down a protein is with an enzyme. The people who got full-blown AIDS weren't having sex with each other. They weren't interacting. I mean, you had people in San Francisco, New York, out in the middle of nowhere in Kansas that got full-blown AIDS. What did they have in common? And this is something that Mr. Fauci should know about. They got the tetanus and they got the hepatitis shots.
Huh.
That was the common factor for the people who got full-blown AIDS. Why? Because they were first responders, they were nurses, and they were unsafe sexual practicers. So now we have the people in Australia I don't know, you're just about to fall out of your chair, but we now we have the people in Australia that the Ministry of Health intentionally tested them for HIV proteins. That should scare people.
Yes.
We should have already seen somewhere around 26 to 46% death rates from the virus that or the pathogen that they created based on the blast sequence and what it was. Now, granted, with most flus that we get a natural herd immunity, but this is not most flus. This is a CRISPR technology, custom created Frankenstein. Oh, actually Frankenstein monster. So not seeing the death rates actually worries me more than if we had seen the death rates. And I don't know if that makes sense to people. I'm not being callous
makes sense
or,
to me,
or crass.
Yeah.
But when you should have seen 13% in the first year, you know, I fully expected that I would see 2 to 3 out of 5 people I knew deathly sick or dead already. And by the second time it went around, that would have jumped up to at least 3 out of 5 based on what it was. Okay. Because, you know, you build a monster truck and you run it through the mud, it creates those swaths.
Yeah.
This thing here is like the big Russian snow tracks, but about 7 or 8 of them wide. So now we come out with the injections. We'll just say injections because they're not by any definition, whether you go to medical books, Oxford Dictionary, or the CDC and the WHO, these are not vaccines. And we look at what they're doing with the spike protein and the clotting. It's the same problem with the SARS, with the inserts in it. The HIV SARS-CoV-2 was given these spike proteins that cause clotting in the lungs and death. I mean, it goes after ACE2 receptors, which are in your heart. They're in your testicles. They're in your reproductive system. And now we have a manufactured, synthesized spike protein in this, whatever they're wanting to call it, that's going to replicate without any hindrance. Your body's not going to fight it. So these spike proteins are traveling throughout your bodies, and we're starting to see blood clots. We're starting to see strokes. We're starting to see heart attacks, which is exactly what all the mRNA injections done in labs for the last 20 years, since the first got loose from labs, that's what it did to all the lab animals. It either killed them through attrition and acute inflammatory response, or when they were exposed to the pathogen, they had a hyper acute immune response and their immune system killed them. That's probably a lot more information than you expected from me, but that's one of the things that I specialize in.
No, that's actually great information. I mean, this whole thing is like worse than the worst sci-fi movie I've ever seen, and it's happening in reality. You know, our own leaders are trying to basically kill us and depopulate us. It's insane.
It's genocide. It's genocide. Look at what we're dealing with. A eugenicist is going to do what a eugenicist does. Now, whether they're being manipulated by the nihilists at the top, you got to remember, we're talking about people that believe this is a matrix of some kind, and the only way out is to destroy it. If you look at what they've been doing over the last 100 years, they've destroyed the environment. They've destroyed our water supply. They've destroyed our air supply. They've destroyed our food and the ground that it's grown in. Now, if you intended to survive in a physical body, would you destroy everything around you that is required for survival?
No.
And, you know, back to the injections that are going around right now. I was warning people last year in February, the minute they mentioned mRNA, what the labs have come up with in the last 20 years. I'll tell you something else that people need to know. These same people who are promoting and producing this particular injection were part of a tetanus shot program in Africa. And I don't care if you want to say, I call him Gil Bates just to get around the algorithms.
Yeah.
Gavi, you said UNWHO, they all were part of the program in Kenya. People can look this up online. Kenya Stetton. I get really angry at this because it's the absolute worst result possible. And I'll explain this to you. In Kenya, they used the tetanus shot. They inserted a chemical called BHCG, which is a abortion-affected sterilization drug. What that means is that you, it will cause your immune system to attack your pregnancy hormones and cause you to miscarry. Sound familiar with what we've been hearing lately?
Yes.
So in 2014, the United Nations and Gabby and USAID, in conjunction with Richa Heller and Gil Bates, decided that they were going to develop recombinant DNA injections so that only two, does that sound familiar, would be required to create permanent sterilization.
Right.
I have been telling people this for over a year now. Okay. I have been on this since last February, telling people about this. In Kenya, what happened was, is it took five tetanus shots in order to create the sterilization. The Catholic Church at the time was actually still trying to put up a facade, and they did a review of it, and they were incensed. Of course, you know, the Catholics lose the next generation of followers, so maybe that's part of it, self-preservation, but the Catholics even reported on it. So what happened is it took five shots to create permanent sterilization with the tetanus shot, and they knew they couldn't convince people of that. So they immediately started working on a recombinant DNA injection that would create permanent sterilization in two shots. And that was in 2014.
So
now what we have is we have mRNA. We have mRNA with BHCG in it. And that's the reason why we are seeing miscarriages. We're seeing women's menstrual cycle changes. And here's the real bad part. If a male gets the injection and goes home and has sex with his wife, those, because it attaches to the ACE2 receptors in the testicles, he is now injecting his wife with this vaccine, or with this injection. It's not a vaccine.
Well, we're also hearing about these self-shedding vaccines from, I think it was from the Pfizer document itself that says they're working on this.
I'm glad you saw that. See here, I have always said that if you want to have a flu shot, that's fine. But you should have to be quarantined for the full extent of the infection period and the shedding period, which is 28 days, before you're allowed to be around me. Because I don't want a flu shot with a strange strain. Have you ever noticed that they always miss it by one? And then all of a sudden we have a flu season?
Yeah.
People think this is, oh, that's a big, no, that's what they do. They miss it by one. And it's not a coincidence that 7 to 10 days after the first flu shots are given, we all of a sudden have a flu season, because it takes somewhere between 36 and 48 hours for your body to process it. And then you start shedding, and you shed for 28 days. That's just with a regular coronavirus, a regular flu pathogen. I have no idea. And that's what really is scary. All the information, in case you can't tell by the way I speak, I know this stuff. What scares me is we have no idea what is truly in these injections, and then adding the BHCG into the shedding. Literally, you see these people who are not injectees. They were smart. They did the research. They said, no, you're not getting near me with this thing. And they work in a closed in space with people who were, you know, I call them zombie TV addicts, and convinced to go do this. And now they are having menstrual problems. They're having miscarriages. They're having strange flu symptoms and cold symptoms. That's shedding.
Yeah, that's insane.
And you know, it's horrifying to me. Now, I'm not afraid of dying. Trust me, I've been in places where I should have been and I wasn't. Because when my time comes, it's going to come. I'm not afraid of it. But here's the thing. About a year ago, well, it was before we knew about the outbreak. See, I got the first information on January 1st. So that'll tell you how far ahead of the curve I was. Somebody sent me some information, said, what do you see? I said, I see an outbreak. And they're like, I said, is it quarantined yet? And I didn't realize it was in China. The footage, the photographs that they sent me from satellite and the data that they sent me gave me no indication as to where it was at.
Right.
All right. But I knew what I was looking at. And I didn't realize that that lab was where it was at. They shut down that whole zone. But anyway, so I started working immediately trying to figure out what we were dealing with, because I saw the symptoms. And if people were afraid of those people collapsing on the street, originally when this thing got loose before it mutated, because of the spike proteins causing clotting in the lungs and the heart, those people were probably, I don't want to say it was staged. if you look at what this pathogen was, it was probably causing immediate heart failure or immediate lung failure at the initial stages.
Now,
and
do
that's
you
that
think,
spike protein.
Do you think this whole thing is a mass genocide depopulation event that they're trying to roll out?
Well, I mean, let's go back to what Jacques Attali said in 1981. This is exactly what they wrote about. It's hard for me to believe that a man connected like that would write a book in 1981 stating exactly what they intended to do. And now we're seeing it today. And, you know, I want to say it was like maybe October before the outbreak, which it was already loose by then, because we had this poor young lady here, 15 years old, extremely good health, Asian lineage, had a really bad case of the flu. She got over it, and then all of a sudden she became sick again. They took her into the doctor's office, and the poor girl died in her. And this is rough. You know, I've got kids of my own. She died in her father's arms before he could even get her into the doctor's office. It was a sudden heart failure at 15.
Wow.
And then at Thanksgiving, the year before we knew about this, we had a lot of college students that were having the flu and then having sudden deaths. I think it was already here at least by Thanksgiving that year. And yes, I do believe I don't think the pathogen is the problem. I'll go back to what I was saying. That October, I got this look on my face, and I realized that we were seeing the last generation of naturally born children. And I realized that because of all the research I'd been doing, and I had no idea if this pathogen had been released yet. I had been doing research on that Kenyan program and what they were intending, and I thought they have figured out a way to sterilize the population. That's the reason why they want 7 billion shots. They want 7 billion shots because they know that between the acute inflammatory response that these things are going to cause and the sterilization that these things will do and the acute immune-dependent enhancement, if they release another pathogen, they can wipe out, you know, that 500 million may be a reality a lot sooner than we, you know, down here on the guidestones. It may be a reality a lot sooner than people think.
Yeah, that's absolutely terrifying.
You know, I've got children that are grown, and it is terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way around it. I mean, what's happening now is like it's unheard of. It's like something out of the worst science fiction movie I've ever seen. But these people exist, and they're doing this to their own people. Go ahead.
Go back to the 1200s when the plagues got loose in Europe. They wiped out how much of that population right before that catastrophe in the 1200s? That it took them until 1400s to build back up enough that they could go check Africa and check the Americas to see who survived. That cataclysm was amazingly terrible. In Southwest United States, that used to be an ocean there. You can still find coral there in Colorado. The people there were boat people, and it drained out that inland sea completely. And it pushed California, the island, up against the coast. Napa Valley is basically that seam, you know, where the fault lines are at. It pushed California into the coast. Down in South America, it separated Antarctica from the South American tip. And that was in, you know, near as we can figure, somewhere around 1100 to 1200. Because the cartography of the time, the maps of the time show Antarctica connected, and it shows California as an island. And when the Spanish came back over here at behest of the Catholics, the Portuguese and the Spanish, they knew what they were looking for. They were trying to see who survived, because in Europe, it took them almost 200 years to recover. And right before that cataclysm, they had an outbreak of plagues. It seems to me like they were trying to lower the population so that they could still maintain control. And besides that, with what's coming at us right now between the solar minimum, the cataclysms that we know are going to happen. I mean, look at the volcanoes and the earthquakes now. The cold, it is like 38 degrees at the southern tip of the Appalachian Mountains at night, and it is in May already. Right. My growing season keeps getting shorter by the day. You know, all the rest of this, financial, social, disease, this is just a smokescreen to hide what's happening with the food supply and the environment around us. And can 8 billion of us survive what's about to happen?
Yeah, it seems like there's no need for conventional warfare anymore. We have the media, we have social media. That's all we need to spread information. It's all about information wars now, and that's basically what's destroying everything. So, you know, tanks and bombs.
Let's go back to what I told you earlier. There's a huge difference between information and knowledge. There are a lot of people who have a lot of information about these injections and about the pathogen. The difference between their information and my knowledge is the fact that I didn't rely on CDC and WHO to give me my information. I went and looked at the white papers. I looked at the research. I tracked it all the way back to North Carolina. You know, that's what I was trained to do. And the other thing with me is I have an eidetic memory. So if I've read something, it may take me a little while to get the Rolodex to spin. But if I've read it before, I will find it again. It's like my reference, you know, to Herodotus. I actually had to go back and go through all four volumes. I don't recommend that for anybody unless you do an audiobook. but there was two things I was looking for. I was looking for his reference to the Gnosians, which I brought up earlier. But I was also looking for another reference that he made. Did you know that Agamemnon's son was 12 to 16 feet tall? That means that the giants were still around in those days.
Right.
And that's not that long back when you think about Agamemnon.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff, you know, this goes back to all the things that they're hiding from us. The pathogen, where it came from and how it was created, who financed it. Very simple. We know it started here in the U.S. It was financed. Fauci was part of the problem. It somehow got illegally transported to China, and nobody's being investigated for it. That will tell you how bad the problem actually is. These mRNA injections started working on these in 2014. Anybody who thinks that they could deliver hundreds and hundreds of millions of doses at the flip of a hat in just a few months doesn't understand the process. These things were already made. They had to have already made them. And the reason why is because there's no way you could do the research, do the synthetics, and produce these things in the few months that they all of a sudden were everywhere for everybody to line up like sheep.
Yeah. And speaking of the, you know, information wars and what we were discussing earlier, you told me something very interesting about what happened to you in the 90s. You were a very early contributor to Wikipedia and what is it, Indipedia?
Independent Media.
Yeah, Independent Media. And they came in and shut you down, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, here's the thing. I'm the generation in the middle. I mean, we had Bill Cooper and we had David Icke and we had Jordan Maxwell. So we had those guys who led us down the road. Eric Von Doniget.
Yeah.
They're the ones that set up the questions and started getting us thinking. But in the 90s, Wikipedia started because the internet started. People look at me like I'm crazy when I say, I remember when you didn't have a computer. I got more horsepower in my cell phone now than I did in the biggest computer I could afford. But Wikipedia, when it started out, was independent people posting. Now, there were organizations that worked at it diligently to get information up and worked with different encyclopedia groups in order to get stuff up. But you had independent contributors that were doing research and posting things. All of a sudden, it changed, and your access was still granted. But if you changed the data and corrected anything, you could do a reset. By the time your screen refreshed, it was back the way it used to be. Original contributors can still get on, but it might as well be access denied, because if you try to fix anything that they're using for propaganda and rhetoric, and you actually denote and use the reference material, they will erase it and put it right back the way it was before you can refresh your screen. People who use Wikipedia as a trustable source might as well go do the fact checks.
Yeah.
Indie Media started out. when the internet got big. We had all kinds of people reporting all kinds of things. Indie Media out in California was one of the first groups that exposed the abuses of migrant workers. That stuff would have never happened if it hadn't have been for Indie Media and San Francisco Gate. I'm trying to remember the writer's name out there. He was amazing. He's still out and about writing books. As a matter of fact, I used to talk to him back in those days, but you know, we're talking 20 years ago now. Yeah. But Indie Media was a lot of independent writers contributing, like me. I did an article on corporate crimes show profits. I showed how a corporation could pollute and save money and then pay the fines and use the fines for tax write-offs. So they got paid twice.
Right.
And they still do it. They do it to this day.
Of course.
Or you get big companies like out there where you're at in California, they go in there and they pollute the waterways. And what they do is they sell their small corporation to a different corporation within their conglomerate. And now they have a tax shelter because they don't exist anymore. Even though it's the exact same company, exact same employees, exact same equipment, they don't have to pay the fines anymore.
Yeah.
And this, you know, this goes back to the 90s. You know, it's like people talk about the sterilization of males, the feminization of males. Well, you know, atrazine was one of the first things that we discovered. Atrazine on crops was causing frogs to lose their masculinity.
Right.
Well, you know, that study was done, and the gentleman that did that study was absolutely amazing. And he stood his ground, and then he lost his academic license. He lost his right to teach. They really crucified him.
And poor Alex Jones with the gay frogs. Damn, that was.
Yep, that's him. Well, you know, you want to hear something really funny about Alex Jones? Well, you know, he works for Ted Turner. He always has.
Yeah.
He is a licensed employee of Ted Turner. Yeah. The problem with Bill Hicks is that's not Alex Jones. Alex Jones was a skinny guy, wore a really nice Austin-style cowboy hat, yeah. And he did public TV and public radio, and he was skinny. I knew him in Austin. I knew Bill Hicks in San Antonio. Two completely different people.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. And people get mad at me for pointing that out. But go back and look at Bill Hicks' comedy and then have a look at Alex Jones.
Yeah, that's one of those conspiracies I could never get behind. They're obviously two different people.
You know, but here's the thing. I knew Alex Jones, the radio host, as a skinny dude, my age, and I knew Bill Hicks. And if the current Alex Jones is not Bill Hicks, he's definitely not the Alex Jones that started out on Austin Public Radio.
Very interesting.
And that is a fact, whether people like me saying it or not. And don't get me wrong, the characterization and the person who is on television and on the internet has released an enormous amount of information, backpedaled a little bit and released more. I think that's fantastic. But at the same time, I think there's a little psyop involved in that, too.
100%. 100%. I'm pretty sure that he's got a lot of controlled opposition in him, you know.
But, you know, and it's all that way. If people say, well, you know, you try to do things without a bias, and that's not true. Even my research, because of my experience and because of the life that I've lived, I have a bias, whether I like it or not. The trick is are you going to admit to your bias, or are you going to act like you don't have one?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Well, we have a few minutes left. It seems like so daunting for people whenever you ask for solutions for things right now, because, you know, everybody's like, man, this thing is too big to fail. They've been planning for years,
decades.
Yeah. They're going to use our own medical system against us, and there's too many stupid people that are just going to go along with it. How are we going to get out of this? You know, it's very discouraging for people right now. What do you think, is a solution that we can kind of get out of this, you know?
If you're a thinking person, I mean, you know, and unfortunately for us, there's not that many.
Yeah.
If you're a thinking person, think, how do you want to live today? because none of us are guaranteed tomorrow. And it doesn't matter if they come around with guns and try to inject us, or if we have a car accident, or if an airplane falls on us, or if we've already been exposed and don't know it. You know, try to think about how you want to live today and do it. If you want to be like you and me, trying to get as many people informed as we can, great, do it. If you want to go out barefoot in the grass and meditate and do Qigong and Tai Chi, I do that as well. Do it. The problem that people, and don't fear being dead. We're all going to get there. How fast we get there might not be under our control at this point, which really sucks. But we're all going to get there. If you worry about that, like they're trying to, I mean, for centuries, they've been trying to get people to worry about death. Well, if they're so adamant about everything else they've done is inverted. So if they're so worried about making sure we fear death, that's probably the one thing that we shouldn't be afraid of. And we can't do anything about it anyway. Live today like you got no tomorrow. And I know that's cliche, but if you don't live today, you may not have tomorrow to do it.
That's very well said. Yeah.
Try to fix things. These people have been at this for centuries, and they've got knowledge that we don't. They've got technology that we don't. They have resources that we don't. What we do have is each other that we can rely on. I mean, how many times have you wanted to call somebody and just blow off steam?
Right.
We have each other to rely on for alternative information to try to keep our sanity. But truthfully, shut off the TV and ignore that crap. Oh, that's just fear-mongering and rhetoric and propaganda, and we got enough of that anyway. For me, it's about living my day. I don't have a TV in my house that plays cable or satellite. I use my phone for watching specifically what I want to watch, and if they put advertisements up I don't want, I report it as spam or misleading or repulsive content.
Right, yeah.
And that's kind of my crutch. You know, I see a MSM article on one of my feeds and I'll report it as repulsive content.
Yeah, there's that wrong.
I do it every time. Why? Because it makes me feel better. Because it is repulsive to me.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing. Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing. We have to keep our sense of humor. You know, it doesn't matter what they do. They have their own agenda and they've got their own timeline. Well, if you refuse to take part in it, what are they going to do to you?
Exactly.
If you refuse to take part in their timeline, they might kill you, but if you're dead, you still don't have to take part in it.
Yeah, good point.
You know, hold to your own integrity, and your own values. And anytime they tell you something, look for the inverse. Basically, if they tell you this is what you should do, you know you're not.
Yep.
You know, masks are not good for you. that was 40 years of science that all of a sudden they reversed.
Yes.
You know, they've changed the definition of herd immunity now. All kinds of weirdness. And you know, that to end this conversation, there goes that history thing again. Look at what they have been able to subjugate and reverse as far as history goes in the last 2 years. I think the things that, I know the things that I was taught and the things that we've proven to be factual. You know, Waco is a good example. We know the FBI set the place on fire, but now the Branch Davidians did it. These kind of things, they have completely reversed a lot of things already. What's it going to be like 10 years from now?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, fascinating, and terrifying times we live in right now. But I agree 100% with what you said. You know, you have to live your own life to the fullest and just act like none of that other shit is happening. You know, live the best way that you can.
You know, the idea is to be like a mud. You know, have you ever seen the mud racing?
Yeah.
Those sleds go through the mud and they don't get any mud on them. But Lord help you if you're behind them.
Yeah, right.
And that's where we have to be. If we want to live our life the way that we want to live it, yes, we have to wade through the mud. But the idea is to skim across the top of it and not take part. And hopefully that helps people. You know, just because they're doing it doesn't mean we have to. It's a thing about walking off a cliff.
Yep.
If all these other people want to walk off a cliff, I don't have to go with them.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. Raven, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We didn't get to nearly enough of the topics that I wanted to, so I'm definitely going to have you back on sometime soon.
I'd appreciate that. And like I said, it sounds weird coming from me, but I am your senior. And I got to tell you, I am so proud of the changes and the improvements and the gradient that you have managed over the last couple of years. I hope that it continues.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And yeah, I know you've been a longtime listener. I appreciate that as well. And the information you brought on tonight was fantastic. And like I said, we'll have you back on sometime in the soon future.
I didn't mean to knock you off your seat, but I've been trying to get this information out.
People need to be knocked off their seat nowadays.
All right, well, hopefully, you know, maybe knocked in the head.
Yeah, knocked into something. Well, Raven, thank you again for coming on, and we'll definitely talk to you again soon.
I appreciate you, Chris. Thank you.
All right, until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll see you again next week.